I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a great Tuesday.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Pope Francis has apologized for the Catholic Church's cooperation with what he called Canada's catastrophic policy of Indigenous residential schools. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
Francis traveled to the lands of four Cree nations to deliver the long-sought apology near the grounds of one of those schools.
Que estoy profundamente dolido.
He said the forced assimilation of Native peoples into Christian society destroyed their cultures, severed families, and marginalized generations in ways still being felt today.
We are strong. We are Métis.
Now 86, Angie Carrar is a Métis Nation elder.
We were taught how to love, to respect, and to honor.
She presented Francis with a feathered headdress after he spoke, making him an honorary leader of the community. Of his words, Carrar says,
I really, really believe the first time I trusted someone.
I'm Ben Thomas.
Russia's top diplomat said Moscow's overreaching goal in Ukraine is to free its people from its unacceptable regime, expressing the Kremlin's war aims in some of the bluntest terms yet, as its forces pummel the country with artillery barrages and airstrikes. The remark from Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov comes amid Ukraine's efforts to resume grain exports from its Black Sea ports, something that would help ease global food shortages under a new deal tested by a Russian strike on Odessa over the weekend, apparently suggesting that Moscow's war aims extend beyond Ukraine's industrial Donbas region in the east. Lavrov said, we will certainly help the Ukrainian people to get rid of the regime, which is absolutely anti-people and anti-historical. This is VOA News. The appeal of Ukraine's first war crimes conviction was adjourned on Monday, as prosecutors keep pushing to hold Russia legally accountable for atrocities, even as fighting rages in the south and east of the country. Thin and subdued Vadim Shmerin, a 21-year-old captured Russian soldier who pleaded guilty to killing a civilian and was sentenced in May by a Ukrainian court to life in prison, sat in a glass box in the courtroom as he faced news cameras. The hearing was postponed until July 29th due to his lawyer's ill health. Around Ukraine's capital region, where Russian forces pulled out 4 months ago, much of the work of documenting crime scenes and interviewing witnesses has been done. Now, a more difficult phase in the search for accountability is underway, and that's finding all of those responsible. A senior UN official says Libya is mired in a constitutional political stalemate that has sparked increasing clashes, a dire economic situation, and demonstrations across the country by frustrated citizens. The Assistant Secretary General Martha Pouby told the UN Security Council Monday that the overall situation in Libya remains highly volatile, with a tense security situation deeply disturbing, showing a force in sporadic violence by militias engaged in political maneuvering. She also cited a dispute over leadership of the National Oil Corporation and serious human rights concerns as well. A top aide to former Vice President Mike Pence has testified before a federal grand jury. We get more from AP correspondent Mike Rossia.
Mark Short, the former chief of staff to then Vice President Mike Pence, has testified before a federal grand jury investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. A person familiar with the matter, who insisted on anonymity, says Short appeared before the grand jury after receiving a subpoena. The appearance was first reported by ABC News, which said Short testified last week. Short, who has cooperated with the separate House committee investigating the insurrection, was with Pence at the U.S. Capitol during the attack on January 6th. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The Biden administration wants the government to plant more than a billion trees across millions of acres of burned and dead woodlands as officials struggle to counter climate change's increasing toll on the nation's forest. As the globe heats up, some wildfires are so severe that forests can't quickly regrow on their own. And this is outpacing the government's replanting capacity and has helped create a backlog of 4.1 million acres in need of restoration. Recapping our top story, Pope Francis has now apologized for the Catholic Church's cooperation with what he called Canada's catastrophic policy of Indigenous regional schools. More at voanews.com. Via remotes, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, July 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. explores sending fighter jets to Ukraine as the conflict with Russia enters its sixth month.
The initial plans called for the U.S. taking Soviet-made fighter jets that NATO allies and Western allies owned and taking those to transfer them to Ukraine, and the U.S. did not want to do that.
Ethiopia's Afar region is in dire need of medical aid, with hundreds of hospitals destroyed by conflict.
All lives in the town of Ahale in Ethiopia's Afar region, where Tigrayan forces who occupied the region until April of this year destroyed healthcare facilities before they left.
And Amnesty International condemns the execution of four activists by Myanmar's military junta. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The United States is exploring whether it can send U.S.-made fighter jets to Ukraine. This as the conflict with Russia is about to enter its sixth month and fighting rages in eastern part of the country. Such a move would be a major increase in U.S. support for Ukraine in its battle against Russia. So far, the United States has provided $8.2 billion in security aid to Kyiv. Pentagon spokesperson Kirby also disclosed details of the latest U.S. arms package for the country, which totals $270 million in aid in defense against Russia's aggression, including $100 million for drones. For more, I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Seldon.
Some of the initial plans called for the U.S. taking Soviet-made fighter jets that NATO allies and Western allies owned and taking those to transfer them to Ukraine, and the U.S. did not want to do that. But in recent weeks, there seems to have been a change in tone. First, the U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff made public comments suggesting that the U.S. was preparing to possibly start, at some point, training Ukrainian pilots. And along with that, the Air Force Chief of Staff said, you know, at some point, Ukraine's going to have to make the change from using Soviet-era equipment, MiGs and Sukhois, and the types of jets that Russia uses, which ammo is limited, supplies to equip those planes are limited, to what they call NATO-ready or U.S.-made or Western-made aircraft. And then following up on that, the White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby suggested that there are early discussions right now about eventually providing Ukraine with advanced fighter planes, perhaps those made by the U.S. or those made by other allies.
The mere thinking and talking about it and making it public creates this fear of maybe an escalation of this conflict. Is the Pentagon thinking about this, planning about this?
U.S. intelligence officials, other Western intelligence officials, have talked about the conflict in Ukraine now, which seems to be focused mostly in eastern Ukraine, in the Donbas, as a war of attrition, a grinding war of attrition, which is playing out not so much in the skies right now, but on the ground with artillery volleys back and forth. And they talk about how some other U.S. equipment, multiple launch rocket systems like the HIMARS that the U.S. has given Ukraine, are making a huge difference. But at the same time, intelligence officials talking about how this is unlikely to resolve as a conflict anytime soon, that it could be months. And you hear officials like Kirby from the White House talking about how the U.S. is starting to look at how to help its ally Ukraine, not just through this war with Russia right now, but looking ahead towards a broader support of Ukrainian defense abilities and capabilities. And it's in that context in which U.S. officials have been bringing up the idea of providing Ukraine somehow, or providing support for Ukraine, getting more advanced Western-made fighter jets to help defend their territory.
If and when, if that decision is made, is it likely to be defensive or offensive? Because the U.S. had ruled out giving Ukraine any offensive weapons that could reach Russia.
Weapons are weapons, and weapons can kill, and they can be used to go on the offense to attack somebody, and they can be used to defend against attacks coming from elsewhere. And that's what you generally hear from U.S. officials. But at the same time, over the past week or so, we've heard from high-ranking U.S. officials, including National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, saying that part of the U.S. goal for what's going on right now in Ukraine and the war between Ukraine and Russia is to support Ukraine, make sure Ukraine retains its sovereignty and its autonomy, and it retains its territory. and can be in a good position when it comes to negotiating an eventual settlement, hopefully, to this war, they say. But they also say that part of the U.S. goal is to make sure that Russia pays a price, that Russia and any other nation that might think about trying to assert its will and take territory by force in this day and age is going to pay a heavy price. And for anyone else other than Russia to realize that the cost of trying such a move by trying to take territory by force is simply not worth it.
That's VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Seldon. The U.S.-based Institute for Study of War states Ukrainian military strikes have damaged all three Russian-controlled bridges leading into the city of Kherson within the past week, and Russia has continued building regional volunteer battalions and is leveraging private military companies' recruitment drives to generate combat power. This more than 5 months into its invasion of Ukraine. William Courtney, adjunct senior fellow at RAND Corporation, discusses the challenges facing Russia with Flashpoint Ukraine host Steve Miller.
The military challenge and the economic challenge are both gigantic. And then the political challenge depends in part on the military and economic. The ordinary Russians have an idea that Russia is not doing as well as the Kremlin says. The sinking of the Moskva had a psychological impact in Russia. You know, that was the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet. There have been so many military setbacks, and then the means with which Russia is trying to recruit people to go fight, and most of that recruitment is taking place in rural areas and non-Russian areas. The Kremlin seems to be afraid to try to recruit heavily from Moscow, St. Petersburg, the other big cities because of opposition there to the war. So this war has become less sustainable for Russia than it expected. Whether the army is exhausted yet, not clear, but it's not in a position to be able to make a lot of progress. As we've seen in the Donbas area, where in recent weeks, you know, Russia has just barely inched forward in some of struck. In the economic area, the sanctions, both the sanctions and the voluntary business pullouts, are having a devastating effect on the economy.
So what sectors do you see hardest hit?
Particularly in areas like semiconductor chips, which Russia has now cut off from the largest sources of world supply of those. So we've seen that automobiles now, the venerable Lada is being produced without most of its electronics. Automobile production in Russia by the foreign companies has plummeted, and it's going down for domestic companies as well. Other sectors, so extractive sector, manufacturing sector, all depend in great part on sophisticated machines that have either Western technology or components or Western software updates, and those machines are going to be in trouble. The aviation sector with Boeing and Airbus, where Russia has impounded passenger airlines, well, the combination of the military setbacks and the economic falls, declines in real disposable income, people's personal income. The combination of those could lead to popular unrest, could lead to some parts of the security sector being aggrieved, that being blamed for the setbacks in Ukraine, and so there's a combustible mix there.
That's William Courtney, adjunct senior fellow at the RAND Corporation, speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine host Steve Miller. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is visiting Egypt, Ethiopia, Uganda, and the Republic of Congo this week, trying to counteract Western blame of Russia for a growing global food crisis. Experts say Russia will push its own narrative as to why it's attacking Ukraine and use the visit to show it has friends. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Russia's foreign minister was in the Republic of Congo Monday to meet with the leadership of the Central African nation. Minister Sergei Lavrov is on his second day of his African tour to bolster international support for his country. Stephen Grast is the head of the Russia-Africa program at the South African Institute of International Affairs. He says Russia will play the victim card when meeting with African leaders.
Is a propaganda war as much as it is a shooting war. And we've seen from the Ukrainian side how successfully President Zelensky has used social media. He gives daily messages. He's talked to parliaments and to Congress and groups around the world virtually. He's seen it being on the front line, and Russia's mounting a counteroffensive. So I think this is all part of that same trend. It's interesting that it's a physical visit rather than just online visits. I think it's deliberately calculated to show that Russia's not isolated, that Russia still has friends in the world, that Russia still cares about Africa.
In Egypt, Lavrov met with the Arab League leadership, seeking the support of the group's 22 member states and accusing the West of ignoring his country's security concerns. He's expected to do the same when he visits African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa. Wale Olusola teaches international politics at Nigeria's Obafemi Awolowo University. He says Russia is using the African visit to clean up its image after invading Ukraine and seeks to influence the continent.
The visit actually reverberates across all of Africa. So there is a message it sends globally in terms of the new relationship that Russia is trying to cut. Russia can make a big deal out of these visits to at least give the impression to other members of the global community that it is not isolated. The other part of it may be a long-term gain for Russia. These kind of visits are not just diplomatic or purely on the surface. Certainly, we expect that some arrangements, some deals may be signed or maybe just informally agreed upon with Russia, especially with respect to countries that are having issues with security.
The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute says Africa imports almost half of its military equipment from Russia and knows that arms export is a critical component of Russia's economic growth. But supporters of Ukraine accuse African countries of doing too little to hold Russia accountable for its invasion. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Mohamed. U.S. President Joe Biden on Monday remained in isolation in the White House after being diagnosed last week with COVID-19. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington says the president was seen during the day participating remotely in a meeting.
The president, isolated in the residence of the White House, participated in an hour-long meeting to urge passage of legislation to return semiconductor chip production to the United States. At the end, the president responded to several questions regarding his bout with COVID-19 from reporters who were in the South Court auditorium.
I'm feeling better every day. I still have this a little bit of a sore throat and a little bit of a cough, but it's changing significantly. It's now up in the upper part of my throat. Actually, it's more around my nose than anywhere else. But they tell me that's par for the course, and I think I'm on my way to full total recovery.
The president also told reporters he expects to have a virtual meeting later this week with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
In other news, Amnesty International has condemned what it calls, quote, the appalling, unquote, execution of four democracy activists by Myanmar's ruling military who accused them of helping to carry out, quote, terror acts, unquote. Sentenced to death in a closed-door trial in January and April, the men had been accused of helping a resistance movement to fight the army that seized power in a coup last year and unleashed a bloody crackdown on its opponents. Amnesty International's death penalty advisor and campaigner, Kiara Sangiorgio, said the executions were, quote, enormous setback, unquote, and were an example of the military, quote, outdoing themselves, unquote, and showing what they were capable of. The Hunter spokesman last month defended the death penalty, saying it was justified and used in many countries. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. Regional authorities, medical professionals, and residents of Ethiopia's Afar region say they are in dire need of medical aid with hundreds of hospitals and health centers destroyed by conflict. The WHO says it is struggling to fulfill the country's need as crises around the world intensify. Henry Wilkins reports from Bahele, Ethiopia.
Mariam Abdallah Ali lost her daughter in May after the toddler swallowed an object found on the floor. But when we went to the local health centre, they told us that they could not perform an operation on her because they didn't have the right equipment, she told VOA. The doctors said they had to go to the city of Samara for the operation, but her daughter died on the way. All lives in the town of Bahale in Ethiopia's Afar region, where Tigrayan forces who occupied the region until April of this year destroyed healthcare facilities before they left. The regional government says 60 health centres in Afar were put out of commission by the occupying forces, though Tigrayan forces and the Tigray regional leadership deny the allegations. Dr. Mohamed Hussein Abdullah, who works at the centre where Ali took her daughter, said they no longer had the equipment to save her life. He says the health centre was one of those where medical devices were available. In the past, they used to perform operations because all the equipment and the medications they needed were at the center, but the TPLF destroyed it completely. The Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, did not respond to VOA's request for comment on the damage in the region. In the nearby Kanaba district, a health center was ransacked and severely damaged. Kadir Daressa Humed is the health center's medical director. He says the medical laboratories have been completely destroyed and they cannot carry out health checks because they do not have the medical equipment, even treatment for AIDS and diabetes. He adds there's a big shortage of medication and the lack of electricity has a negative impact. While the need for food aid in Ethiopia has been dominating the headlines, officials say there is a great need for medical services too. The UN's World Health Organization says that just 22% of healthcare facilities are fully functioning in Afar and the neighboring Amhara region, compared to the period before Ethiopia's conflict began in late 2020. The WHO says medical and food aid must be combined to be effective in Ethiopia.
Whether it's in terms of essential supplies, whether in terms of monitoring for infectious diseases, whether it is in terms of immunization services or services for mothers and children, it's really important for these services to be provided at the same time as food.
For Ali, aid came too late to save her daughter, but for others, there may still be time. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Bahale, Ethiopia.
Samantha Power, administrator of the U.S. Development Agency, USAID, has announced new aid to tackle Somalia's humanitarian crisis after meeting with Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud. Mohamed Desani reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
Power was accompanied by the U.S. ambassador to Somalia, Larry Andre, for the talks with Somalia's president. After the meeting, Power announced that USAID will contribute $476 million to help Somalia fight the prolonged drought that has devastated many parts of the Horn of African country. In a statement issued by USAID and sent to VOA via email after the meeting, Power said, with the new announcement, the United States has provided nearly $707 million in humanitarian assistance for the people of Somalia in fiscal year 2022. Bawa said Somalia is the epic center of the food crisis gripping the Horn of Africa in a video posted on Twitter Sunday.
This isn't like other droughts. This isn't like other emergencies. When four straight rainy seasons do not produce sufficient rain, we are looking at potentially an unprecedented catastrophe with millions of lives hanging in the balance.
Bawa appealed to other countries and donors, including private citizens, to step up and support the people of Somalia. However, at a news conference inside the U.S. embassy in the Somali capital, Mogadishu, she said the U.S. has several concerns about delivery of the aid and is taking steps to elevate them.
And again, I want to stress this is both to avoid corruption and the siphoning off of resources to individuals who put their own welfare above those of starving people.
The UN Office of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, Somalia office, said Sunday nearly half of Somalia's population, 7.7 million, require humanitarian or protection assistance. The UN says one out of eight children in Somalia are dying before turning five, and one in 100 women of childbearing age die due to pregnancy-related complications. UN Food and Agriculture Agency Deputy Emergency Coordinator Ishaku Mashalia tells VOA that food insecurity in Somalia has him worried.
The severity of the food shortage is really troubling, and perhaps might be the worst that I've seen. And what's particularly unique about this is that we're seeing the fault-filled raining season, so usually the local supply that you would see coming into the market to cool down demand and also help households be able to withstand this shock that they're facing it's simply not available.
Somalia president has appointed a drought response envoy who on Friday said that the drought in Somalia are caused by the combined multiple effects of climate change, deforestation, and conflict. He said in the last decade, more than 10 million trees have been cut down, that the people are constantly degrading the environment and risk making the country a desert. Mohamed Laisane, VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
If you like Luke Combs, Miranda Lambert, Chris Stapleton, then you'll enjoy Country Hits VOA. I don't just play the songs rocking the U.S. Billboard Hot Country Songs chart. I'll tell you who's making news, and we'll hear from the artists themselves. Join me, Nikki Strong,
every Friday at 10 and 2200 UTC
for Country Hits VOA on VOA 1.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com. From voanews.com, there you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joe Biden has committed to curtailing the use of landmines worldwide. This policy change reflects the president's belief that these weapons have a disproportionate impact on civilians, including children, long after fighting has stopped. The new commitment will align U.S. landmine policy outside of the Korean Peninsula with the key requirements of the Ottawa Convention, the international treaty prohibiting the use, stockpiling, production, and transfer of anti-personnel landmines. The unique circumstances on the Korean Peninsula and the U.S. commitment to the defense of the Republic of Korea preclude the United States from changing anti-personnel landmine policy on the Korean Peninsula at this time. The United States will not develop, produce, or acquire anti-personnel landmines, nor export or transfer anti-personnel landmines, except when necessary for activities related to mine destruction or removal and for the purpose of destruction. The U.S. will not use anti-personnel landmines outside the Korean Peninsula, nor assist, encourage, or induce anyone outside the context of the Korean Peninsula to engage in activity that would be prohibited by the Ottawa Convention. The United States will seek to destroy anti-personnel landmines and their stockpiles not required for the defense of the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. will continue to pursue material and operational solutions that would allow the United States to accede to the Ottawa Convention while at the same time ensure the United States' ability to meet its alliance commitments. The United States' actions are in sharp contrast to Russia's actions in Ukraine, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Political Military Affairs Stan Brown. In Ukraine, there is compelling evidence that Russian forces are using explosive munitions, including landmines, in an irresponsible manner, which is causing extensive harm to civilians and damage to vital civilian infrastructure there. The United States is proud to lead the world in conventional weapons destruction. We've invested more than $4.2 billion in more than 100 countries since 1993 to promote international peace and security through our conventional weapons destruction programs, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Brown. We'll continue this important work and remain committed to continuing partnerships to address the humanitarian impacts of anti-personnel landmines.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.